Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a victorious Coleman Had a Dream podcast. We are going to be talking about the frankly massive victory against Latvia. We'll also have a mention for the South Korea game. We will answer some of your questions as we go along and obviously look at what the bigger picture in the group is. I am joined, as always, by Ruth. How are you doing?
You made me laugh with the use of victorious when it's whatever it is, one win in, what is it now, 13 or 14 games. Still, I'll take it.
Don't be so miserable. I forget who now, someone responded to our last pod saying they were quite optimistic until they listened to the 60 Minutes of Doom podcast is what they... So we can't win, Ruth, and then say, oh, it's only 1-14. You know, we've got to... We've got to be positive when we get the opportunity before we become the 60 minutes. I said 60 Minutes of Doom would be our band name or the name of our first album.
I don't even think that's fair. I think we went up and down a little bit in the last pod.
Yeah, 60 Minutes of Up and Down has a very different connotation, though, I'd suggest, Ruth. So,
let's see what we do.
I'd rather doom than any other alternative there. Okay, ladies and gents. So yeah, like I say, we're going to talk through the game. I mean, we'll focus, Ruth, as little time as possible on the South Korea game, really, because it was just, as Rob Page repeatedly said, not very important. Where did you watch the two games?
Where did I watch? I can't even remember. The Korea game, actually, I had to watch on delay because it was work time here, and then I managed to shilly and shally and get to the bistro for the Monday's game because they were both lunchtime games here.
Yeah,
so I managed to get off work for one, for the competitive one, and had to watch the other on delay. The Korea game was a funny sort of, I don't know, I kind of feel like Paige is a bit damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. I don't think his comments helped in the lead up. I think I mentioned in our group chat that even if you think that, you can't say that as publicly as he did. Your role is to make it a positive experience as you can and make it as purposeful as you can. I think in terms of the starting 11, the fact that it was a very strong starting 11, I think if when he does that, you worry about the injuries and the run out time for players, and when he doesn't, you worry that they've had no time together ahead of a competitive game. So I can see his point, and like I said, I think there's almost a no-win situation in games like that, but all in all, I think we did turn it into a positive experience as a friendly, so it was what it was.
I agree. I think it was interesting that he said that it kind of didn't matter, it was unimportant, all that stuff, and then basically played his starting team for the next game, kind of implying that that is in fact absolutely not true. But I think you can read into it however you want, right? I think, as you said, it's a no-win situation for him, especially in the predicament he was in. I think ultimately he had to do something that was going to make a difference, and looking at that from an outcome perspective, I think he ticked, apart from winning the game, I think he tipped pretty much every box in terms of what we wanted. We wanted a change of shape. We got that. It had an impact. We wanted a clean sheet. We got that. I actually think also we restricted South Korea really, really well in that game. And I wondered your thoughts on that, because when you actually look at the stats of the game, I think they maybe only had one shot on target. That was a long range effort. I think they only had one shot from within the box as well. So ultimately, from what we wanted from that game, I actually think we achieved really, really close to 100% of what we wanted.
Yeah, I mean, we had maybe about a third of the possession compared to their two-thirds, but had substantially more shots on goal. Yeah. I think it was something like 11-3 or something like that. And Paige, I mean, and this could come up in the Latvia again, Paige can't help it if people haven't got their shooting boots on. I think it was important that Jordan James got that start. We can see the impact he's starting to have in that position, and it came through in the Latvia game. I thought Broadhead's performance in particular was really good, very encouraging. It was great to see Brooks back. You know, it was actually ultimately a very purposeful and useful friendly, and I'm glad it worked out that way because I think we needed that sort of positivity ahead of Monday's game.
I agree, and I think as an exercise, it was everything we needed to be. It's easy to say this in hindsight. I'm glad it all worked out. I do massively question the start in 11 he put up, because anything could happen there. Mm-hmm. But you know that is very much nitpicking, as you say, damned if he does, damned if he doesn't sort of situation.
I think the bringing Ramsey on was the most kind of eye rolling part of that.
I agree. But you're right. The standout really was Jordan James. I do think Josh Sheehan played mm-hmm. well when he came on. I got to be honest, and mm-hmm. I know we talked about that in the last pod. I thought he played pretty well and contributed. I really like the way he gets forward. He's quite dynamic. Some people pointed out he's a bit slow to pass the ball at times, which is probably a fair assessment of the situation. But again, you know, we don't need to spend too much time on this. I thought it was a good outcome from the situation. It was what we needed and what we wanted it to be. You obviously watched that on like delay, like you said. I went to it. There's a bar called the Duke of Oz in Leiden, which is like the next town on from us. And I called them the day before and they said, yeah, we'll have the game on, mate, no problem. And I got there and they were just like, it's on what? And I said, I spoke to the guy, I said, it's on S4C. And he was just like, nah, we haven't got that, mate. And I said, your mate said you could also put it on BBC iPlayer. And he was just like, oh, it's on iPlayer. I was just like, yeah. He said, I can do the red button. And I was just like, well, that's not the same thing, mate. So I'm sat in this bar in Leiden whilst the Dutch are playing. They were playing Greece, I think, at the same time. And mm-hmm. Northern Ireland were also playing, and the Republic of Ireland. It's essentially an Irish bar. So you had like four different games going on at the same time. And in the end, the only way I could watch it was by watching it on my phone. So I got a pint glass from the bar and propped my phone up against the pint glass. And I was sat in the pub watching this on my own, like the saddest man in the world. But yeah, I don't think we need to talk about that too much. I think the big one was James and then Sheehan demonstrating that maybe we do have a little bit more depth in that area than perhaps we give ourselves credit for. And again, I think what you said there about Paige and people not having their shooting boots on is not on him. I think it's a demonstration perhaps of the wider problem that we have in the group. But yeah. I think ultimately for what we wanted, and considering the pressure he was under, to be fair, I think he's made every dangerous call, if you like, he got right and got away with. So I think we can have, mm-hmm. personally, no rooms for complaints there.
No. And just a nice, there was a pretty good atmosphere given the size of the crowd. I think it was just, you know, all in all, I think it just ticked the boxes. And I think they turned it around, as I said, to turn it into as positive an evening as they could. And I think there's a nice there's obviously a relationship between quite a lot of players on both sides via Spurs. It was kind of nice to see that that leveraged. Ben Davies obviously made a difference, and I think we can see that more explicitly in the Latvia game. But I do think we struggle at the back when we don't have him sort of corralling and organising things. And I think I'm glad, having changed the formation, obviously, for the Latvia game, that we did play that back five in the Korea game, because I think there was an impact there as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I want to talk about Ben Davis, actually, when we talk more about the Latvia mm-hmm. game now, because I thought he was excellent. I really, really did. And I think his contribution kind of goes under the radar a little bit sometimes in the way he corrals people and leads that back line. But also, I think he has a real good manner with a referee, which I know sounds like a stupid thing to say, but I think when things were kicking off, especially against Latvia and that awful tackle on James, again, I think he manages those situations really well and is forceful without being a dick about it, basically.
He's a really steady head back there. I've got a lot of time for his play. And his, as you say, his professionalism and his approach, he's a real asset.
I agree. To look at the Latvia game, because ultimately, Ruth, that was the key one. Mm-hmm. No real question marks over the starting 11. Obviously, Ramsey came in for Broadhead and unquestionably the right decision. Was there anything else you would have liked to have seen different, or are you kind of happy with how we lined up?
I was happy given who's suspended, who's injured. I think once you'd honed in on the formation question, I think the kind of the 11 more or less sorted themselves out. Maybe there was a question about Wilson versus Brooks or Johnson versus Brooks. But I think that was a nuance. I think the basic 11, given who we've got suspended, was more or less self-evident, really.
Yeah, I agree.
I was just going to say, did you have other thoughts? Sounds
no,
like not.
No, I agree with you. I think the only thing I wanted to raise was I found it interesting that I saw a lot of people, social media, whatever, saying, why aren't we going more attacking against Latvia? Like, whilst I'm not Paige's biggest fan, I do think there is an element here. There's some stuff that it doesn't matter what. I reckon we could have won that game 10-0 and some people would have complained somewhere along the line. So I just wanted to raise that because I think whilst, we've been critical of Paige, I think it's also right at the correct time to say what he's done well at the same time. And I think he did make that correct decision. He kind of balanced the side really well. And that was the key for me that he did, was balance the side. I think James came in and did the thing he needed to do. And it allowed Ramsey to basically go and do whatever he wanted as well. And I've got a bit of stick on Twitter for saying that Ramsey was the man of the match. But I think the difference he made in that game was huge, and I think that was because he had that solid base behind him. And again, maybe Paige has finally learnt that he can't pull Ramsey back into that kind of more defensive spot next to Ampadu. He needs to let him roam, and I think Ramsey proved to him what he can do. And especially in that first half, I know he played about 10 minutes of the second half, but I thought in that first half, Ramsey was absolutely outstanding. Some of the touches and turns and moves and the way he seemed to glide across the pitch with the ball, I just thought he was a superb pleasure to watch. And, you know, he's not always been that way of late, Ramsey, and I thought he was absolutely fantastic in that first half. I really, really did.
I would agree with that. And I thought there was a great sort of synergy between Davies stepping up from the back, feeding Ramsey, feeding Nico, slightly down the left hand side of our as we attacked. I thought that was great to see, and I agree. We've said many a time that I understand the temptation when we feel we're short of defensive midfields that you can put Ramsey back there, but it just doesn't work, as we said on the last pod. And I think this was a very visceral demonstration that even having someone as inexperienced as James in that position is a better option than putting Ramsey there, because it just doesn't suit his play, and he orchestrates so much better in that more forward role. Going back to what you were saying about people asking about being a bit more attacking, I just wonder whether, given how well he played in the Korea game, whether there was a feeling that Broadhead might get a start in this game. And, you know, again, in hindsight, when you look at the chances that Johnson missed, I can see that might be what sort of hindsight points, but I don't think you would. I can't see you choosing Broadhead ahead of Johnson at the minute, at least on what we've seen.
Oh, 100%. And I think, you know, again, I'll mention this now as we're talking about it. My ratings, I gave Brennan Johnson a 5, which a lot of people said was harsh, but ultimately, there's two elements to that, really. One is that he had, I think, 3 excellent goal scoring opportunities. The one he's got put through at the start, he's kind of created some space for himself and had that shot at the edge of the area, and obviously he's gone through later in the second half as well. And, you know, those are good chances. He's not hit the target on any one of those. Like the latter one on the right hand side, where he's kind of swiped it across goal, is obviously a harder opportunity, but you've got to hit the target. And the problem is, and which isn't his fault, but he's not a number 9. He needs to play off someone. He can't be the number 9, I don't think. And I think that is the thing which maybe Broadhead would have offered in a slightly different way. Broadhead has been playing kind of across the front 3 himself this season, but it also doesn't solve the problem. So therefore, maybe Bradshaw might have been the more logical person to start, but then you have to drop Wilson. And again, I think Paige proved to himself in the end the other night that the decisions he'd made about where to play people, Ramsey, Wilson, etc., that those are the people he wanted to play, and he was going to stick with that and see if we could use our pace to kind of move them around a bit. And ultimately it worked. And I know we got the goals in kind of slightly interesting circumstances, but ultimately it did work, right? So whilst I don't think he played well, Brennan Johnson, I still wouldn't have replaced him with Broadhead, because the movement that Johnson gave does disrupt because he is so quick. And I still maintain that his 5 out of 10 is fair, maybe 5.5 out of 10. But I think his job is there once he's been in those positions. He's a very, very talented player. He should be hitting the target at least, never mind scoring. So, I think he played well. But again, realistically, we're saying this with hindsight, right? I don't think anyone... I think if it had started Broadhead ahead of Johnson in that game, there would have been things on fire. So I think we'll... You know, he's made the right decision there. And looking at that first chance, again, someone else I thought who played really well was Ethan Ampadu, who was my second choice for man of the match. That movement to bring the ball out of defence, brush someone off, and then what a pass with the outside of his foot to set Johnson away in those first 5 minutes. Just, again, Ampadu, I thought was worth the admission fee. I say that, I didn't go, but he was worth the admission fee alone, I thought. On Monday, I thought he was really, really good, and that was a brilliant way to start the game for him and really show what we were capable of. And I think it actually rattled Latvia in a way that they were just like, oh God, like this is going to be harder than we think it is going to be.
Yeah, we've been talking about Ampadu's kind of threaded passes and the absence of them lately, and I think it was great to see that Wilson was doing it a bit more than he has been as well, but particularly value Ampadu doing that. And I think that first opening exchange was a very sort of evident of that, but it continued through the game as well. Those good kind of cross field balls, just spreading the play. It was, you know, it was all just much more positive coming out of that defensive midfield position. And Ampadu, I think, had a confidence in James that, you know, sort of showed more confidence than you might have expected, having only really played half a game with him at that point. So that was good to see.
Yeah.
And I just like that kind of orchestration that he can do when he's on his game.
Yeah, and I think also just a slight backward step, but you were talking there about Ben Davis, Nico Williams and Aaron Ramsey creating that little partnership.
Yeah.
I also thought that the speed in which Ramsey and James, whilst it did get exploited to an extent in at the end of the first half, the partnership they developed up there was really, really interesting and very effective very quickly, which again was something that was really important. And even though they don't have the same synergy, perhaps, you know, with Connor Roberts on the right-hand side, still their little partnership was effective and dynamic, and it drew other people into the game and drove other people forward at the right time. But also, again, Ampadu's such a leader. You can see him kind of giving the hands, if you like, to kind of say, right, lads, pump the brakes.
Yeah.
And again, I just thought he managed the situation really, really well. And again, was a real threat. And I felt like everything we did well came through him and Ramsey in that first half.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good about what you're saying about Ampadu, and it goes back to what we were saying about Davies. When later in the game, when Davies was chatting with the referee, I think it must have been around the yellow card thing. We'll come back to that one. You could see Ampadu actually kind of going around, doing the calming everyone down, like vice captain role, as it were. Like, Ben, you go and talk to the referee, I'll get these heads sorted out, kind of thing, you know. And I think that there's such a value in that, of someone that just knows when to step in, knows when you need to the tempo, knows when you need to simmer down. He's just so mature in that regard.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that spreads through the team, right? Especially when you know we went 1-0 up. I was, you know, starting to worry that we were going to rue those chances. Ben Davis himself had a great headed chance. Are you going to rue those? And obviously then, you know, someone tries to decapitate Harry Wilson and we got the penalty. I mean,
that might be a slight exaggeration, David.
Attempted murder, that was. I do always wonder in those circumstances, like from the Latvian defender's perspective there, don't get me wrong, I'm delighted with the outcome. Like, what are you thinking there, mate? Like, what? Do you know what I mean? Let him bring the ball down. What do you think you're going to do? Very odd, I thought. Stonewall penalty, of course. There was no argument there. And if you want to see, you know, again, what playing regular football does for Aaron Ramsey, just have a look at that. Just have a look at that penalty. Waited for the keeper to basically sit himself down and rolled it the other way. And there was a brilliant angle I saw of behind, and I can't remember who it was, but one of the Wales players was stood, it might have been Wilson actually, was stood kind of right behind Ramsey. And as he starts to step up, the keeper does his little fall over the wrong way. And I think mm-hmm. it's almost as if at the same time that Ramsey hits the ball, one of the players just turns around, just as a big fist bump. Like, it's not, like it's not, he doesn't even need to wait to something. Oh, the keeper's gone down. Well done, lads. Good work. And it was like really like almost comic timing, actually. It was funny. It was mm-hmm. perfect. And I think, yeah, after we scored there, we were completely in control up until, I would say, like the 35-minute mark. Where we looked a real threat. And I think that was my only concern through the whole game, realistically, because I want to talk about our defence a little bit there, is that, mm-hmm. and again, that naivety or maybe that the budding relationship that Ampadu and James have, is that that did deteriorate at that point, I felt, and we dropped too deep, and then there's too much of a gap for Ramsey to kind of pick up runners, and it just got a bit scattered, I think was the word I was going to use to describe it, in that Ramsey in the Ampadu, sorry, and James did drop deeper. It allowed them onto us, and not no point were we trying to kind of drive out a bit. And I was wondering if you had a thought on why you thought that was, why they felt kind of compelled, if you like, to drop in a bit more.
I don't know, because they kind of got, it was the end of the first half, obviously, but it felt like it was the last 7 or 8 minutes of the game and we were trying to lock it up. It felt, in terms of what we were doing, it felt like that, and yet clearly it was happening an hour too early. I don't know. I wonder whether there was a feeling that us having got the penalty that Latvia would gun at us a bit. Whether there was that kind of like steady the ship. We have had a propensity to score and then concede a little bit lately. So whether there was almost a kind of like, okay, guys, for the first 10 minutes after we score, I expect to see you tightening up. I don't think there's an answer, Dave, but I wonder whether there was a little bit of that going on. I think the Latvians just upped the tempo a little bit. The whole game became a bit scrappier, which suited them. So I think it's probably a bit of all of the above, but the timing of it was interesting.
Ryan Davis 15 sent us a message on Twitter, and we've talked about this before, where people are definitely targeting our fullback areas as our kind of area for joy, as the opposition's area for joy.
Yeah.
This was one thing I was going to talk about. I wonder if the reason we dropped back was because the ball was going in behind the fullbacks again. A centre half was having to get dragged out a little bit to kind of deal with it, which left some spare space or a spare person in them. And I think Ampadu was maybe dropping that bit deeper himself, thinking, right, if I need to drop back one more step, I'm in the right sort of place, I can do it. And James is maybe following, taking his lead from Ampadu in that. Mm-hmm. So everything kind of shuffled back a bit. Ryan's message was, something I've thought for a while is, can our wing-backs actually defend? I've never faulted their work rate, but I feel like we're vulnerable at times when we're attacked out wide. Are they even too attacking in that 3-5-2? Latvia's only threat came from crosses into the big players. Either a cross wasn't stopped for coming in, or the other wing back left a free man at the back post. We sort of got away with it three times. I think what's difficult about that is, I don't think the wing backs are too attacking in the system. I think the way the system benefits us is kind of that front foot pressing, attacking sort of play. And if it comes off, then you're in the right position. You can capitalize on it. The problem is, if it doesn't quite come off, they're sort of in a little bit of limbo sometimes, the wing backs, because they're not as defensively minded as they are attack minded. That leaves those pockets, and that leaves the center backs exposed a little bit to kind of have to deal with something extra that they don't always kind of shouldn't be their job. And I think Ryan's made a good point there.
I agree. I think one of the pluses of the 5 over the 4 at the back is that we, even if that's how our wing backs are playing and that's how they're exposed, we should have a little bit more solidity in the center. So, and perhaps that's why we did get away with it in the attacks that he's referencing. I think if you're going to play with wing backs, you almost have to kind of accept that there are going to be consequences of it. It's like any formation, there are pluses and minuses, and this is a clear minus of this situation. What you want is that the heart of the defense is solid enough and can read the game well enough that there is coverage. So if Nico is exposed, Ben knows what's going on and is stepping out a little bit and covering a little bit closer to the touchline and so on. I think it's a price we have to pay at the minute. until we, at least until we can get some solidity at the back and we know what's going on. I think when we, when we play like this, we need Nico and we need Connor Roberts running up. They've got to be involved from an attacking point of view. And we've just got to hope that the sort of defensive five, as it were, that becomes the three central defenders and the two defensive mids are reading that well enough. And that will come with time as well. And I think it's one of the key points where Ben Davies's maturity and reading of the game is very, very clear, and Ampadu the same. I think Mepham is getting better at it. I think it might be one of the key things that's holding Rodden back, because I don't think he's had enough gameplay recently that he is reading games as well as he was when he was playing regularly. And hopefully that's going to improve as he's running out with Leeds more.
I agree. One thing you said that I think is the real is the way to unlock it is time, and I know that's not easy. And mm-hmm. you know, we've got these big games and whatever, but I think the time is the key. We've gone back to this system. We've changed to it. The three at the back. Obviously, we had a different defensive system because of Ben Davies being away for the birth of his child. Mm-hmm. I think it was in Turkey, which was you know, on the back of a disappointing game against Armenia where we didn't defend well. So, you know, we are trying to bed in this new system, and I know, you know, we're used to it as fans perhaps, but maybe the players need to readjust and again get used to Ben Davies coming back into that and everything else. And I think that was part of why we sat back. I do think, and you talked about game time there, I gave Danny Ward a 6 in my post-match ratings, and the main reason was for the catch he made late in the second half at the corner, mm-hmm. which then began the counter attack when we scored the winner. But I would say that's the only thing he did well. And I gotta say, in those last 10 minutes of that first mm-hmm. half, my God, he was flapping like a seagull. The boy, he was just, and it's a shame because he's obviously a good goalkeeper, but he's someone who's more affected by that, I think, than Hennessy, for example, used to be. Whereas Hennessy could just come in and do what he needed to do, whereas I think Ward really needs that, and I just don't know what the answer is there. He's not even getting picked in the squad for Leicester in the games for the international. So that's a big concern to me. And again, you know, they've had two, I think maybe three even very, very good headed chances, and the flap goalkeeping, and you know, the lad who's slid in at the back post right at the mm-hmm. at the death of the first half, you know, sketchy moments. And if we were playing a better side, that could and probably should have been 1-1 at that point, really.
Kalniev, I think it is, had a downwards header that Ward kind of scrambled out for a corner, and then from that corner there was another mad scramble and he missed the cross. I think this is like 2 or 3 minutes to go in the half, and I think it all stems from that, what we were chatting about, the whole messiness of that last 10 minutes of the first half. And it was a worry. You felt like, if they come out and start the second half with this kind of energy and this kind of press and our goalkeeper is flapping like this, we're going to be in trouble. Thankfully, it didn't quite play out like that. And I don't think, there isn't going to be a solution in the short term. The games are in the next 8 weeks or so. It's not as though a loan transfer is going to happen or anything like that. I think we are where we are, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? And that's also part of international football. You know, you end up, if you think about the people we've lost there, we've lost just from our whole team, but more. Ramsey's obviously ended up going off. We've not got Morel. Lockie is missing.
You know, Dan James
is missing. So it's not even, you know, you could make the argument there that possibly four or maybe even five of those people would actually or could start. It depends on the circumstance. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, I said it before, it is time. It is, you know, that is something that makes a big difference, and it will develop and change. But I recognise that the goalkeeper one is something that is not going to change with time, which is that is one big concern for me there. Whilst we're talking about the squad, Nick Latham, Lazy Boy Hits Car, mentioned this before, great name. he's asked the question, with a fully fit squad available, who would miss out on the starting 11, just given what we're saying there? Do players like Lockyer, Brooks, Broadhead, Johnson replace players, people like Mepham and Wilson, James and Moore? What's interesting here is, and we've talked about this before, in that a lot of the times when Bale was playing, it excluded more from the side. And we often said that because of suspensions and regular injuries to those players in different cycles, very often Page's mind was made up for him by the fact that he didn't have an actual choice to make. He had to do what was there. What's interesting here is that now that Bale's gone, with Moore there, when he comes in, and you know he will obviously be able to play in the Croatia game next, you assume he'll go back into that side. It actually changes the dynamic of our attackers quite a lot there, because really that front three were kind of doing all sorts of different things, going out wide, moving each other around, swapping positions, and Ramsey was dropping deep and then going out to the left and forming his spot. When James and Moore come back, and whether they start or not is a different question for me, but it is interesting how they change the setup. For me, Moore is the one who has to come back in. I would be then pushing Johnson out wide. But then if we do that, you're asking Wilson or Ramsey to play left wing, which is not helpful. So in turn, bringing Moore back actually changes the way we have to play because of the roles that the other people who are kind of left, if you like, remain in the squad. And it's a really interesting balance because Moore has to come back in for me because we were looking for that option very often. Yeah. And I think out wide as an attacker is Johnson's best position. Then if you play Dan James on the other side, also great, but then you're dropping Ramsey and Wilson, which he's definitely not going to do. So it does raise interesting questions there. And, you know, it is an interesting one as to what will come next.
I think, assuming we're going for a back five and a holding mid, you've ultimately got a perm three from some combination of Wilson, Ramsey, Johnson, James, Brooks, Moore. You know, that it's one of the reasons that we add that, you know, previously there's been an argument for having four at the back because it just gives you that extra body up front and a bit more flexibility. Fundamentally, we score more goals when Kiefer Moore is on the field. And I think, I don't think we can ignore that fact. We might be having a different conversation if Johnson had got a brace in this game and he easily could have done. True. So, you know, maybe there's a, well, Johnson can't be as missy again, but you can't rely on that. I think Brooks obviously played about the game ultimately, and I think he made a case for being involved. And it's a nice dilemma. I suspect what will happen ultimately is someone is suspended, someone is injured, and you're actually really only perming maybe three from four.
Yeah.
It's not as big a group of people as we think. I would still advocate that we are more likely to score goals when Kiefer Moore is on the field, and we need to score goals. We've done what we can probably in terms of solidifying the back. I don't think that back, let's treat it as a seven. You might argue about whether it's James or Morel or whatever, but there's a back seven there in one way or another, isn't it? And if we're going to do that, that's only three up front. Given how we played in the first half in particular, and assuming everything runs smoothly till October, you'd want Ramsey in there because there is an level of orchestration. And he just sees the game so much better than anyone else we've got there at the minute. Wilson is actually really dependable. Johnson isn't a striker.
No.
He needs, as you say, he needs to be playing off someone. So suddenly you've just got more body. You've got more warm bodies than you've got positions on the field, and you have to make it work. And I think we just work better when Kiefer Moore is one of those three.
Yeah, I think to kind of answer Nick's question, I don't change, for me, I don't change the back five in terms of central defence. I don't change that, even with Lockyer coming back. Meppham does give me some level of heart palpitation, but I think he's earned his place there. We can't take him out. I think the two holders, again, Ampadu and James has written him, you know, he's grabbed that opportunity, right? I still wonder, you know, is the Croatia game and Modric going to be too big for him? I don't know, but he's earned the right to at least have that opportunity.
It's either going to be Ampadu plus James or Ampadu plus Morel, isn't it? It might just be a matter of seeing how things are going for them at club level between now and then.
Yeah, and how often they're playing.
I think that's relatively set. That one second defensive mid might be the only debate, and it's probably just a debate between two people.
Yeah, it definitely is. And then what's difficult there is you're trying to fit the other three in. So you're right, I agree with you, Moore has to come in. I think it's interesting that Ramsey did play more off that left and have those mm-hmm. kind of partnerships, but wasn't really requested or required to do much tracking back. So equally, if yeah. you were to play Johnson sort of off that centre-right position, Wilson yeah. similarly didn't really do too much tracking back, especially in the first half. So as a consequence, you kind of... those are players are in their best positions. It does leave us a bit more defensively vulnerable. And what we also have got to forget, is that Dan James, I think, has got more goals and assists in the last campaign than anyone else did. So, you know, it's a real tricky balance. But I think for me, I would do more Ramsey and Johnson, and you just make it work. And you have to train in the short time you have those the wing backs to be a little bit more sensible, and that balance will come in time with the two central midfielders, the holders, that they can kind of plug gaps a little bit better to let us be a bit more attacking, because ultimately that's what we need. We can't draw games now. We need to be going to beat people, including Croatia. Ruth, we were looking at the second half. Ramsey,
sorry, Dave. We're just talking about that. Of course, Nico is missing the Croatia game because of a second yellow. So although we're kind of talking about a stability yeah. across that back, we're going to have to do something there. I'm guessing it would be Wes Burns. But again, that might be a little variable that for that game in particular, that, you know, do we take Ben out there and put Lockyer in central three? I think we're looking ahead, but it isn't quite as settled back there as we might like it yeah. to be because of that suspension.
No, that's a fair point. For what it's worth, I would be putting Ben at left back and bringing Lockyer mm-hmm. in at centre half. But we will worry yeah. about that in a couple of weeks' time, Ruth. We can bask in this a little bit longer. The next thing is obviously the second half started. Seemed to kind of start back off where we'd started in the first half. I thought we were mm-hmm. in control, kind of dominant. Latvia didn't really have much of the ball, and if they did, it was in an area we were happy to let them to do it. Obviously, Ramsey goes off then. He said it was a yeah. precaution. He's taken a bit of stick for that, which I think is unfair. But I think what it did do was allow Wilson, ironically, to come more mm-hmm. into the game. Geraint Rowlands, Roly Beck, has asked, does Wilson and Ramsey work? Are they too similar? I really, really hadn't thought about this too much, but when Ramsey went off, whilst I felt that our level in general kind of dipped a bit, I thought Wilson did actually in turn come into the game more. He gave him a bit more license to roam, whereas Ramsey was the person who was yeah. roaming before. Wilson was now the person doing that, and Brooks was a bit more kind of placed out wide. So it was interesting, I mm-hmm. thought, how that kind of dynamic worked. And I think Geraint's made a good point there. Do you think they were... I think they might be a bit too similar, but do you think they work together?
I think it might be an issue if you have more up front, yeah. then I think they might be a bit too similar, because who's providing the run, who's providing the width? I mean, I know you've got your wing backs, but that kind of triangle, the base of the triangle might be too similar when you've only got more up front if you're playing Wilson and yeah. Ramsey. It's a nice problem. Yeah. Are you better off having, you know, maybe you do go into a game assuming you're going to play Ramsey for two-thirds of it, bring on Wilson for a third of it. It's not a bad position to be in. And then you have, you know, a combination of Johnson and Brooks doing something similar as a part of that trio as well. I'm inclined to agree. I think if we've only got three up front in that sense, then Wilson and Ramsey may be too similar. Yeah. And I can't see it ultimately a problem that, you know, you can mix and match between the two of them.
Yeah, and I think you're right there, because, you know, Wilson is not playing 90 minutes every week for Fulham, so yeah. having half an hour is not, you know, it probably works well, in inverted commas. Similarly, Brooks is playing, but again, he's not playing 90 minutes, so bringing him as yeah. that rotational player helps, especially with yeah. Ramsey getting a bit older. Obviously, as the second half has gone on there, I thought we managed the game relatively well, to be honest. They did kind of put a bit more pressure on us maybe in the last 10 minutes. Obviously, there's that huge chunk of injury time. Speaking of huge chunks, a flawless link there. Obviously, that lad was desperate to take a huge chunk out of Jordan James's leg. I I've given up, Ruth, putting things on Twitter about I don't understand that's a penalty anymore, or a handball, or because literally I just don't think I understand the rules anymore, and I mean that in a completely genuine way. I really don't think I do, but what in the love of God are we doing where we've got this system where we can watch this back? If that is not a red card, like, what does he have to do at that point? Like, physically, does he have to punch him in the face and kick him in the knee at the same time? Like, what?
Yeah.
What is the require? I mean, I was baffled, absolutely baffled. And I don't know if you've missed it a couple of weeks ago about Mike Dean talking about, you know, ignoring the VAR basically and doing his mate a favour and getting him out of trouble and stuff, all of that. Every time I see one of these things now, I honestly do wonder, and I'm not for a moment saying like it's a rigged game or whatever, but
yeah.
I honestly did look at that and thought the referee must know he's dropped the bollock there. The man in the VAR room must know that that is a red card, but because they've made the yellow card decision, we're going to watch it 3,000 times to try and find a justification as to why it's not a yellow, why it is a yellow, sorry, and not a red, because if you look at it in real time, it's actually normally the slow motion makes it look worse. In real time, it's worse because you can see not only the speed of it and how it's unbelievably deliberate it is, but also when he actually catches him in the full time shot, the ball's not even close to being around.
And
that was the thing. That was the real seller for me. The ball was not in shot. And I don't understand football. That is a red card. All day and twice on a Sunday. I'm like mad.
Yeah, I think the inconsistency is a big concern here. I mean, look, if I was Joe Morel, a straight red for what he got.
Yeah.
And then this one doesn't sum to a red, particularly under review of our. It's like you say, it doesn't make sense. I can't pretend to explain it. There's no rational understanding here. It's been interesting, obviously, with the Rugby World Cup on at the minute and how they use the TMO versus how we do it in football. For example, in the Wales game with Fiji, I'm sorry, I'm going off in a tangent a little bit, but I think the parallels are interesting. Excellent. There was a situation where the referee on the field had originally given a try. The TMO was looking at it. The TMO is very publicly saying, and it's public to the referee, you know, I don't think there's enough here for you to not go with your on-field decision of a try. So the referee has made that try decision. The TMO is saying, I don't think there's enough of it. But the referee has the confidence to say to the TMO, no, play that bit back for me again. I want to see that bit again. Just that bit. Play that. He watched it three times. And he overturned his decision and didn't give the try, even though the TMO was pushing. So I think that somehow there's a relationship and a confidence in their procedure, their role as a referee, that we've lost in football. And I think we need to look at how we can address that. I don't think the technology. It's how we use it. And something has gone wrong in the footballing process that it's left everybody feeling pressured by the technology and pressured by each other, as opposed to having a team of you working on something with good evidence. Let's make a good decision, which is how they approach it in rugby.
I think for me, the communication element is the real crux of it, because you can't hide behind it. You know you're getting beamed out on telly in front of millions of people and whatever. And they sort of tried to address it in the Women's World Cup, where the referees had to do like they do in the NFL, where they kind of like turn their mic on and could make an announcement to the thing. But all the referees did in that circumstance would say, like, no goal, offside. So, well, obviously, I know that because I'm watching the game.
I can understand that from your hand signals.
Yeah, like, I'm not stupid. I understand where the question is. But if it's using that offside example, you should say, like, it is offside because when the ball was played, the centre-half's foot was too far back. Or it's handball because they've moved the hand. Or not just saying the decision is a penalty, which is like,
yeah.
Cheers, pal. I know that. And I think the communication is a big part of that. And I'm always remember this, the story where years ago, Newcastle played Man United at Old Trafford. It was in the late 90s. And It was 0-0 and Alan Shearer got swiped down in the box and Paul Durkin was the referee and he didn't give the penalty. And everyone was apoplectic. It was definitely the wrong decision. It was 100% a penalty. And the referee came out after the match and said, cards on the table. I was slightly obstructed in my view at the time. I couldn't see it. I therefore couldn't give it. And I know that's not helpful, but that's what happened.
Yeah.
I didn't see it. I can't give it. I'm sure I know everyone is right. But without seeing it at the time, I just can't give it. And it pisses you off. But at least you can say, well, at least I know why now. And for me, what should happen...
And that was the right decision for the referee at the time. Yeah. You can't see it, you can't give it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think what the situation for me needs to be is it shouldn't happen after every match, but if you use VAR and the referee goes to the monitor, in my view, the referee should come out after the match. It doesn't need to be a big interview in front of the world's press. He can do it in the referee's room, just in front of his mates, where someone comes in and says, okay, you've gone to VAR as a press release. Can you please explain your decision? And it needs to be 30 seconds long, or you just release the audio like they do live with the rugby. And then I think maybe not all, but a lot of these problems go away then, because again, you may not agree with the decision or the outcome they've reached, but at least you can have a semblance of saying, I understand why now, because what happens afterwards is you just guess. And with your man the other night, I can't see a feasible reason or an excuse why he's not upgraded that to red, other than he doesn't want to look stupid. He wants to back himself, and he knows he'll be able to get away with it, you know, because this will disappear. And the one thing I thought that would have cost is your man who should have been sent off for assault has later in the game is cut in off that right-hand side and hit the shot and kind of ruffled the side net in. And I thought to myself, if that ball goes in the back of the net, and it was a million miles away, there would be hell on. Absolute hell on. And again, all the referee's got to do is explain himself. And it doesn't make it right, but at least you know how they've got there. And I think we've got this technology. I'm not in favour of everything, but there's a level of stuff you just think, lads, this is not hard. Just be open and on it. Like, the more it seems like it's a secret, the more complicated it gets. And it just the trust is just completely eroded, I think, for fans and players alike. And people just don't know what they're getting in for. Anyway, he's a knob. So as the game's gone on there, I think the thing that impressed me most was we just kind of managed the game well.
Yeah, there was a few instances where we had some short corners and things where I don't think we actually... Like, we wasted opportunities. I'm not sure I could consider that as managed. Yeah. And I think there were times when we kind of missed Ramsey's sort of steadiness and the maturity that he brings on occasion. I thought we were a bit late with some of the substitutions. I mean, obviously, Ramsey was changed pretty early in the second half, but otherwise it was pretty late in the second half before we did other substitutions. I thought that was interesting. But all in all, as you say, we kind of saw out the game in that sense. And I think it was, I like the fact that we were still prepared to attack in the dying moments. And obviously it's great to see Brooks on the field, never mind scoring goals, but it was clearly very, very well taken. I like Wilson's kind of perseverance on the wing. It would have been easy to let, given the point in the game, just kind of let that ball run a bit. So, I mean, all in all, I thought it was a more positive ending to the match than we've had at times recently,
Agree. And you know, credit where credit's due to Wilson. A fantastic work rate, given the time of the game, to go out there and keep the ball in, you know, juggle it so brilliantly on the sideline, keep the move driving forward. He's, cut inside, half the width of the pitch there and moving defenders around. What a nightmare to defend against that must have been. When he's got a five-yard start on you as well. And then, whilst I want to give the finish the credit deserves in a sec, the thing that I've not seen talked about is that the timing and the weight of the pass. If you watch that back, everyone has basically just panicked and it's like, oh God, and it's pandemonium at the back. And if you look, there's actually three against two in their favour when it actually gets to that.
Yeah.
But Wilson has driven in and everyone's just gone, shit. What do we do? And the three of them have just tried to converge on him. And just at the perfect point that the third one has got there, he's slowed himself down, waited and waited and waited, and then. And it was perfect weight of delivery, perfect timing, and the way he's dragged those three people out of position whilst the finish was lovely. What a brilliant piece of play from Harry Wilson, and the timing and the way to pass, I thought, was superb.
And I think not that I don't want to downgrade Wilson's efforts there, but also Brooks points to where he wants the ball.
Yeah.
So the defenders aren't blind to that either. And I mean, Harry obviously feeds in a lovely pass. And as you said, I think it's the weight of it is particularly telling for how Brooks can react to it. But I like the fact that Brooks is like here, which isn't the obvious place either, the way Wilson's running in, because it swings in the other direction, doesn't it? And I like the fact that one, Wilson had the confidence in Brooks, because it would have been very tempting just to keep running at those defenders at that point. I like the fact that Brooks is prepared to cut away from the goal, which again might not be the natural instinct, and kind of backs himself knowing he's going to have to cut back and dink the goalkeeper. So all of it, I think, is great evidence of how we can play. And you just want to see more of that, basically. Yeah,
exactly. And that's exactly right. It shows the potential we have. Boosh Taliesin, who's one of the guys who writes for us, he sent us a message, Paul, and he said, do we lack a cutting edge? I think that's a really interesting question, because I don't think we lack a cutting edge. We're just not consistent with it. And it just goes to show, though, what we are capable of. And I think that's the thing, is the potential. Because, I mean, Brooks, we've obviously missed him and he's had a terrible time. And it was great to see him back, and fantastic 20 minutes at the end with the crowd, the Wales fans just seeing Brooks will tear you apart. And even when they were doing the applause to the fans at the end, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it now. What a moment. but the words I used in my match ratings were, the finish was filthier than a miner's shovel. And it was absolutely delicious. Absolute, for like, it should be illegal. Like, kids in my school should not be allowed to watch that. It should be X-rated. It was so good, so cool. And it's one of those as well, like the keeper has made, as soon as the keeper's made his move, the timing of it, and you can see, he just does a little dick, and there's always a moment where you can see the keeper is like, oh, for fuck's sake. like he's just like, I know I should have stood up. I know. Oh, there it goes. And you can see the despair on his face. Absolutely lovely. Yeah, I don't know if you want to add anything about Brooks. I don't think he managed, he didn't add huge amounts to the game, not through his own fault, just the way the game kind of panned out. But it just goes to show the quality he has when he's given that opportunity, really delivered.
Yeah, no, I think I can see us using him as a, for want of a better expression, impact sub. But I don't think he'll be impactful. I think he'll be kind of sneaky and catch you out kind of sub, as it were, and I think that suits his game. And it was just beautifully taken. I think the end of the Korea game where the Canton stand is singing his song for, which felt like 30 minutes solid, and the same in Riga as well. And I think fundamentally it's just great to see him back playing football, and playing football at the highest level. When you think of what he and the family have endured, there's just a huge joy in seeing that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm aware of the time, Ruth, and I know you've got work work to do. So I'm just one thing, just to go on the cutting edge thing. I don't think that's fair. Owen Williams has sent us a message. Is it time for Mullin yet? We're not going to thank you for the message, Owen. We're not going to go back down that that particular rabbit warren. Never mind rabbit hole. But again, it does raise questions when Moore is absent. Do we need that kind of proper striker? Because Bradshaw came on. I wanted to mention something you mentioned about the subs, Ruth. We got a message from Kai White on Twitter, who said, thoughts on how Rob Page did. It's really interesting, because Kai sent us a message before the match saying that he thinks Rob should be sacked immediately and Hansi Flick should be the manager now he's been sacked from the Germany post, which, whilst I admire your optimism, Kai, is never going to happen. But I do think what you said there about the subs, he left the subs too late and everything. I think that is a perfect summary of the situation, because for me, in this window, apart from the stupid things he said before the Korea match, as soon as actual football started, I think Rob Page has done really well. He didn't say much between the two games, which I thought was interesting. A lot of the players came out and said all the interesting stuff. And I felt that was fascinating that they kind of fronted up and said it rather than him just talking in platitudes. I also think that that's a classic circumstance, you know, where Boussain in hindsight, as he left the players on too long there, I think Wilson in his energy at the end of the game there has showed he had more left in the tank, not a problem. Who else could you bring off? You know, maybe you could look at, you know, did he leave Johnson on too long? You know, but that's it really. No one else is going to come off that circumstance.
Yeah.
So I think it is indicative of the situation that he's in, where even in a 2-0 win, which for the most part was comfortable, there's still the odd question being asked of him, you know?
Yeah, and also, you know, if Johnson, as we said, if Johnson had got a brace, say, and we'd been 2-0 up in the first 20 minutes, would we have any qualms about Page's situation?
Exactly.
And that ultimately is not on him. You can't control whether Johnson is going to sky something over the bar, or he's going to head wide, or Ben Davies is going to head wide. He can't do anything about that. What he can do is equip the players to be in that position. I think I was more surprised by the later substitutions, just from an energy point of view. But as you say, perhaps we weren't lacking it. And I think that also stems from the fact that we're in a better position this season in terms of who's playing games. And everybody, you know, generally speaking, people are getting regular time, perhaps not a full 90 minutes, but they are seeing the field. And I think that kind of would have helped, and it probably gave Page a reassurance about leaving people on that he might not have had 6 months ago.
I agree. That answered a lot of his questions for him, didn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I think, but I think it also takes one, and I think excuse is too strong a word, but I think it takes one of the excuses off the table as well, that he can't lean on an argument that he can't control how fit the players are, because right now they should be basically in as good a condition as we've had probably for the last 2 years. So I think that that in itself puts a slightly different pressure on him, because you can't use the, oh, he's not been on the field since June, or, you know. So I think that was quite well, actually, in fairness to him, because you've got these circumstances you've got to live with, and some of them are making your life difficult and you've got to do something about them, and some of them are making your life difficult and you can't do something about them. And there are times when you can lean on the answers, excuses, and that one is off the table now. So I think it does bring, like I said, I think it does bring a slightly different pressure with it.
I agree. And I think to go with that, we've been critical of him when it needed that critical side. I also think as a consequence of that, you've got to give credit where credit's due. And I think, apart from those stupid comments, everything has worked out for him. Am I delighted with every decision he's made? Perhaps not. But he needed to change the system to get a clean sheet in a friendly game.
Yeah.
He did that. He got minutes into the legs of people who needed it. He did that. We had a little gap in between where no one was injured, nothing changed, the plan could continue. He managed that situation well. He's made the correct decision in terms of players and formation. We needed to keep a clean sheet. We did that. You're right. We could have been 2-0 up early on, and it's a different game. We could have won 5-0. Equally, Danny Ward could have come out and flapped to that, and someone gets on the end of it. And it's 1-1 at halftime, and all of a sudden, it's a very, very different game. So I think it just go to show how difficult a line he is walking. But I think if we're going to be negative when it deserves it, we've got to be positive when it deserves it. And I do think whilst I'm not all of a sudden his biggest fan, my scepticisms of certain things remain. Ultimately, I think you do have to give credit when credit's due. And you have to say he got all of the big decisions right in this window, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's taken a pressure off now, hasn't it, for the remainder of these qualifying games. We've got Croatia next. Are we expected to beat Croatia at home? I don't think you'd say we'd be expected, but we want to go out and give them a, you know, value for money, as it were, in a game. And I think we're in a position now where we can. We've got a formation that is at least tighter, and like, we're not going to get overrun in quite the way we were. So I think all in all, in terms of setting things up, we've done that. And I think that's taken the immediate concerns off Paige. Ultimately, what we're discussing come December, when we're the other side of the qualifiers, that's obviously going to fall out with what happens over the next three games. But I think we are where we are right now. And I don't think there's a real movement to do anything different at the moment.
No, I agree. And you know, you say about the Croatia game, I think just to wrap up, what is coming next is really interesting, because we have that Gibraltar friendly, which is in Wrexham, of course, where, yeah, for what it's worth, I do think we will see Paul Mullen in a Wales shirt. I also think that, again, we shouldn't be risking anything because we've got the Croatia game. And you say, yeah, we shouldn't be expected to beat them. You're absolutely right. But they've got Turkey at home on the 12th before we have that game on the 15th. That's a big game, because our group is definitely tighter than you'd think. And, you know, really what we want to happen there is we want Croatia to beat Turkey. We beat Croatia. And then the group, leaving Armenia aside for one sec, would mean that we would be level on points with Turkey in second place. So, you know, it's not just the outcomes here. The knock-on effect of everything is really big. And yes, I appreciate Turkey have Latvia and when we have Croatia, so we do need to win. But, you know, the way these games can pan out, or are panning out, is really relevant and helpful to us, I think.
Yeah.
And I did briefly mention this last time, but you're right. Are we expected to beat Croatia? No. But depending on how those things pan out, if we do go out there and beat them, then we are the only team who will have had 4 points off them. Even if we lose to them, we're probably going to be the only team who is going to get 1 point from them. So, you know, that there's definite, you know, positives about the situation as well. Mm-hmm. Armenia and Turkey drawing is a huge plus for us. Latvia got battered, so I think that also put them out of it completely. And you know, Croatia, realistically now, top of the group, better goal difference, game in hand, they're going to run away with it so long as we beat them in a month or so. So I think circumstantially as well, it's kind of has worked out for us as best we can. And you're right, we don't go into that Croatia game thinking we should win this, but we go into that Croatia game knowing that a win is huge for us, and it's certainly within what we are capable of, I think.
Undoubtedly. And I think the strength of this window is we're going in with some positivity to that game. Yeah. So, you know, it feels like we're building a little bit again. It felt like we were scrambling in the spring and the early summer. Now, at least we feel like we're on a positive trajectory. It's two games. You can't say too much, but it's a better state of mind than what we had in June, clearly.
All right, yeah, it's a massively better situation. Have you got anything else you wanted to add, Ruth, before we wrap up?
No, I just, Chris's piece that we've put on the website is titled Positives But No Answers. I think that's actually a really good sort of summary of where we are right now. It was a good window. Are we that much clearer where we are, who we are, what we want to do? Perhaps a little bit, but not definitively. So I think that reflects my state of mind as well. It was a good window. You can't pretend it isn't. We've just got to keep going forward so that we feel we're ultimately getting to the answers that we want.
Absolutely. And big thanks to Chris for his two match reports and Reese as well for his match report and the contributions for the videos and pictures and stuff you've seen on site.
Thanks to Reese for those pictures when he was over in Riga. They're really good.
I'm so jealous. Thank you to everyone involved in that. Thank you to all of you reading that. My match ratings are online as well at ColemanHadADream.com. Just lastly, before we wrap up, you can support us by going to buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream and making a little donation there to help keep this podcast free as best we can. You can also go to bagseatbags.com and use the code CHAD10 for 10% off, which also gives us a little slice and helps keep this podcast free and keeps us in beer tokens. That's not true, actually. It just keeps our website running is the actual reality of that circumstance. I would love for it to be given as beer tokens, but no chance.
If we get to a point where we can have a beer, Dave, let me know.
At this point, I'd say beer tokens. I think I'd be happy with beer token. Yes, we'll see. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your time, Ruth. Good to chat to you as always.
And you. Take care.
Thank you very much. Thank you for listening, ladies and gents, and we will speak to you soon. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.